Sunday with our 3rd District Congressman for State of Oklahoma, Congressman Frank Lucas. And Congressman, lots of things going on nationally across the board, but let's talk about some things important to your rural constituents. Just a few days ago, House Ag Committee had a rather extensive hearing with Gina McCarty regarding primarily WOTUS, but a lot of things regarding the EPA. And just the whole culture with EPA is really alienated and made a lot of folks across the country pretty upset.
And clearly in the hearings, the director made it quite clear she wasn't backing up. She wasn't changing her mind. She wasn't slowing down. She was going to continue to move forward. As you and I visit, there's 11 months and I think 2 days left in this administration. I would hope that whoever the next president is, first act will be to, shall we say, terminate the present leadership in a whole number of agencies such as EPA. But right now, Director McCarthy made it quite clear to the Ag Committee she's full speed ahead on all areas.
It seemed like that she's not even slowing down, even with some injunction stays in place. She doesn't want to slow down at all on things like WOTUS.
Absolutely. Even though the courts basically have stopped her implementation, you get the impression she's doing everything so that if that court order would be lifted, they would instantly get back on schedule, instantly move forward, and that whatever internal things they're doing, they continue to do. Now, that's the impression she gave. She is very committed to giving the federal government exclusive control over all waters from the time they fall from the heavens until they reach the Atlantic or the Pacific. Now, that's not what she would say directly to our questions, but that's the grist of what it amounts to.
One of the other things that's been there for quite a while, the extra layer of regulations and extra permitting that are right now required. I know this has been something we've tried to remove several times, but it doesn't seem like we have much luck on getting that done.
Yes. Whether it's pieces of legislation to go at the process, we can't get them all the way through, and the president wouldn't sign them anyway, or using the appropriations process. That's our traditional vehicle. When you have basically a rogue administration when it comes to following the law, you use the appropriations process to limit their ability to spend money, to block them from doing these things that are obviously contrary to the spirit of the law, contrary to the Constitution. But because we've not been able to make the regular appropriations process work in recent years, last year was an omnibus appropriation bill. The year before was a series of omnibus appropriation bills. You don't have the opportunity to put those riders in. Speaker Ryan has made it very clear that we need to restart the regular appropriations process. Secured some commitments, even from the Democrats in the United States Senate. Now, will that work out? I don't know. But every bill we move in regular order gives us that many opportunities to address some of the flaws in the decision-making process at the Obama administration, which, by the way, did I mention they'll be gone in 11 months and a couple days?
I think you mentioned that. You mentioned the regular order. Mr. Ryan wants to do that. How likely is that given this extra wrinkle of the argument over the Supreme Court situation with Justice Scalia's death?
Well, first of all, much of the political oxygen in D.C. has been sucked up by the presidential campaign, the focus on who the nominees will be on the Democratic and the Republican side. You add to that the extra level of importance in the new administration, and for that matter, what happens in this final 11 months of the Obama administration. There is precedent in the back in history, and I'm not an attorney, as you know, Ron, but judgeships have stayed open anywhere from a matter of days to almost a year. Lyndon Johnson, in his final year, wanted to put a Supreme Court justice on in the place of Earl Warren. And when the Senate Republicans and a number of Democrats in 1968 said, no, you can't put super liberal Abe Fortas in, basically Berger didn't resign, the seat didn't come open, and it waited until Richard Nixon came into office. So there is, from my perspective, no real need to be in a hurry. Now, if President Obama wants to nominate someone who is a constitutional jurist, then I suspect Senator Inhofe and Senator Lankford would take a look at it. But based on President Obama's actions in the past and the people he's put on the court, he will nominate someone, if he nominates, that will be very, by the standards of the 3rd District of Oklahoma, hard left liberal. I don't think the Senate will allow that to happen. But that's a Senate directive under the Constitution, not the House. So I watch the process. 11 months and 2 days, we'll have a new president.
Farm bill. It's continued to be implemented. I mean, just the other day, they were announcing some new rules regarding SNAP that comes off of the authorization from that 2014 farm law that you helped shepherd. On the farm title, on crop insurance, are you satisfied with where we are in the whole process now that we've actually gone through a crop year or two?
I think in the process as a whole, as you well know, Ron, there were some really dramatic changes from the 2008 Farm Bill to the 2014 Farm Bill, and the department had some struggles in implementing that. There were a number of areas from a wheat farmer's perspective in particular. I would have thought the department could have moved more aggressively, more quickly, but we are where we are. I think most of what's been done is necessary. Now, that said, there will be controversies. The new rules dealing with food stamps, SNAP program, how many choices have to be available for a store to be able to take the stamps. We'll debate and discuss and work our way through that. In the Appropriations Committee in the United States House, Cardinal Lederholt, that's the term we use for a chairman of the subcommittee on appropriations with jurisdiction over ag, would like to increase some requirement standards for food stamp recipients. We'll see how that sorts out. But basically, farm bill implementation generally, I think, is moving along in an orderly fashion. But that said, Ron, between the Supreme Court issue and the Senate, getting the regular appropriations done, working our way through the rest of these presidential primaries as a nation, don't expect a whole lot to happen in 2016 in the United States Congress legislatively.
Crop insurance continues to really be a whipping boy. Are you satisfied with, you know, the balance that was able to be put into place through the various measures, including for the 14 farm law?
I think generally the biggest challenge we face as farmers and ranchers in rural America and crop insurance is just protecting the money. Because with the old direct payment program gone, absolutely gone with the end of the previous farm bill, the conservation dollars are there, but they are committed generally to long-term things like CRP contracts and practices already in place. The only real pot of money left is crop insurance. And whether it is in the regular appropriations process or in some kind of an omnibus bill, we will have to fight very hard to protect that crop insurance funding. Because if you don't have the money there, crop insurance won't function. And if you don't have functioning crop insurance, there is no safety net. So this is a real political, legislative battle, not just for this year, but for every year to come.
One other area regarding Farm Bill, the Title I, the oilseed debate over cottonseed, Mr. Vilsack saying doesn't have authority, have to figure out a way how to pay for it. Your successor, Mr. Conaway, disagrees pretty vehemently.
I think Chairman Conaway's right in this. Most of us realized on the committee at the time we put it together that what the cotton industry was having to deal with in order to end their WTO lawsuit was putting them in not just a disadvantage in international trade, but it was putting them at a disadvantage from the rest of the crops. They don't have a reference price. There's some fundamental differences. The oil sealed language was placed there as a way, a parachute, an emergency just in case it had to be used. I had hoped that the world economy would rev up and we wouldn't have the problems we're having with commodity prices in general. But implementing this is important to the folks in the cotton industry. Now, you'll say, why does that matter to everyone else? Remember, we don't have hard production requirements anymore. There's no such a thing as allotments and quotas. So you can move your production around from crop to crop. And if the situation in cotton continues to get bad enough, they will shift into other acres, and that will impact other commodity groups. So we all have a vested interest in making sure this oilseed option is available to try and help the cotton folks survive some tough times for the next couple of years.
You think that's going to take maybe some legislation to do that then?
My last conversation with Chairman Conaway indicated to me that he thought the administration had existing authority under the 2014 Farm Bill. That's the way I read the law. I would hope the secretary would reassess his situation and do that. But if we have to help through the appropriations process or fire a shot across the bow with a piece of legislation, I'm confident my chairman and the committee will do what it takes.
Overall, this is an election year. I think you mentioned at one point something like 11 months or something.
A couple days.
How important is this, I mean, election is concerned? Obviously, the experts are saying we're probably going to see you remain in the majority on the House side, very much up in the air on the other body and the White House.
Look, you've got a Democratic primary where you have a fellow I served with in the House before we went to the Senate. Yes, he's a registered independent in the Senate, caucuses with the Democrats. Bernie Sanders is a socialist. He's very proud. He's happy to tell you that. With socialism comes a different perspective about the market economy. It comes a different attitude about using the tax code to make everyone equal, more government involvement. He has been so successful, he is pulling Hillary Clinton to the left hard. And if you watch their process, it's not about was Barack Obama wrong when he went to the left, but how much farther to the left of Barack do we go? That's a major philosophical point. On the Republican side, we start out with 23 candidates. We still got a dozen or so out there running around. At some point, we have to get down to the final selection group. The way it looks to me, probably Mr. Trump will be in that group. Mr. Cruz will be in that group. Any given day, who knows who the third one will be? I suppose right now Marco Rubio, but you'll have three people to pick from. The national election, I think, will set itself up to be a great debate between do you believe in the market economy? Do you believe in people's self-responsibility, self-reliance? Will we continue to slam hard to the left? Will we move back more to the right or to the center? This contest will really, really matter. And it's not just the opening now on the Supreme Court, but you've got several justices like Ruth Bader Ginsburg, who are having major health problems, who are at an advanced age. There could be a substantial, I'm talking one, two, three, or more, appointments made by the next president, and that will drive the court for a generation. Mm-hmm. So there's a lot at stake, and everyone needs to participate. We need to do a good job of whatever primary you vote in, selecting your party nominee that best reflects you and hopefully Oklahoma, and moving forward, because we're going to live by the results. And did I mention in 11 months and 2 days, that person will be sworn into office?
As you get around the district, what are you hearing? I would think, now, I'm not sure that you can do a lot about this, but I'm sure you're getting some conversation about fracking and these earthquakes and everything else.
Absolutely. Most of that, as you well know, Ron, is covered by state jurisdiction. The Corporation Commission is moving more aggressively every day to try and make changes in the injection well programs to get rid of the salt water that comes up from these wells to try and address that. I'm not a geologist. I'm not a hydrologist. But when you take something out of the ground at 12,000 feet in my area and you put the leftovers back in at 5,000 feet, I could see where potentially that could lubricate the earth. But I think the Corporation Commission will get it sorted out. And if they are successful, we should at some point soon start to note a difference. The biggest challenge, though, for my district right now, and it comes up in all my rural towns, is the commodity prices. And that's natural gas, that's crude oil, that's wheat, that's cotton, that's beef. I mean, with the world economy in the doldrums, with the United States never having really come out of the 2008 recession, I mean, we're under price pressure. Cattle are 30% worth 30% what they were last time. Wheat's $3 and something at my local elevator now. Corn's half of what it was a couple years ago. $28 crude oil yesterday, and that's sweet, and the sour stuff was $17. I mean, we're under strain. We're a commodity-driven economy. That's why you've got to have an administration that will make the right decisions to rev up the U.S. economy, and you have to hope that places like China and certain of our markets around the world, they'll get a grip on their business cycle so they'll go back to consuming again. We can't, and this has been the case since colonial times, we can't consume all the agricultural products we raise. We have to sell into the world markets, and the world markets need to rev up so their consumers can afford to buy the wonderful things we produce.